Good morning. I'm Don Meyer, Board of Tacoma Commission President and co-chair of the Northwest Seaport Times. I'm the managing member special here at the council meeting, May 2nd, 2020. I'm The managing members will now recess to an executive session pursuant to RCW 42 to discuss with legal counsel representing the agency matters relating to litigation or potential litigation to which the agency is a party, but public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequences to the agency. The executive session will last 30 minutes. The executive session will immediately be followed by a closed and confidential FMC session authorized under the Federal Maritime Commission regulations and laws and as authorized by the Port of Seattle Port of Tacoma Alliance Agreement. Together, the executive session and FMC session is expected to last a total of 2.5 hours, and these closed sessions will end at 11:30 a.m. No final actions will be taken during the executive session, and no action will be considered in the public session, which follows as a result of these discussions. We'll reconvene in public session at 11:30 a.m. Thank you. Good morning again. I'm Don Meyer, Port of Tacoma Commission President and co-chair of the Northwest Seaport Alliance. Present with me today are Port of Seattle Commissioners Cho and Hasagawa, Port of Tacoma Commissioners Keller, Rosnino, and McCarthy. Commissioners who are virtually with us, Commissioner Eng, Port of Tacoma, and Commissioner Calkins and Felwin, both of Port of Seattle. Excused today is Commissioner Mohammed of Port of Seattle. We are reconvening following an executive session pursuant to RCW 4230 to discuss with legal counsel representing agency matters relating to litigation or potential litigation to which the agency is a party with and public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequence to the agency, as well as an FMC session authorized under the Federal Maritime Commission regulations and laws and as authorized by the Port of Seattle Port of Tacoma Alliance Agreement. Our meeting is being held at the Fabulous Center located at 3600 Port of Tacoma Road, Tacoma, Washington. This meeting is being streamed live on the meeting page of the Alliance's website at www.northwestseaportalliance.com. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. I would also like to acknowledge that we do reside along the coastline of the Salish Sea and recognition that we are residing on the ancestral lands of the Puyallup tribe. I would now like to turn to CEO Wolf. Could you please provide your report?
Great. Thank you, Chair Meyer, and welcome, Commissioners and public, to the managing member meeting of the Northwest Seaport Alliance. I'm going to first turn it over to Tom Bellarude, our Chief Operating Officer, to provide an update as to gateway operations.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon, Commissioners. A lot of updates going on currently that I want to bring you up to speed on. We'll start in Seattle at T5. There's heavy vessel activity scheduled for this week there. And I know we've been talking recently about rail service and how are the BN and UP performing and why are there some delays. The good news is we're beginning to see that moderate out to where the service levels are improving somewhat. So at T5, heavy BN traffic there with the MSC account. The Burlington Northern has been stepping up and providing a much better level of balance of both eastbound, westbound rail cars for that business. We've been hearing some strong rumors about SSA adding some new top pick equipment at T5, which is good news in the sense that it will allow them even better access to operate both the vessel activity and the rail yard at full capacity concurrently. So good news going on there. And then we have a meeting planned actually for this afternoon after this meeting with MSC senior management, with SSA, with the Puget Sound Pilots, and our own staff to make sure everyone's on board with what the water depths are there and what the situations are to get the vessels in at berth. So good, strong, open communication going on with all of those parties. At T18, you'll recall, not very far in the past, they had such terminal congestion that they were only able to put one gang on a vessel per shift, just because they didn't have space to discharge the cargo fast to get it off the vessel. Therefore, those vessels would be sitting at berth for sometimes 4, 5, 6 days when it should have been in and out in maybe 2 days, just because of the staffing or the manning available for the vessel. Good news is they're back to their normal gang structures of 3 or 4 gangs per vessel. And what that does, of course, is it spins those vessels back out of the harbor quicker, discharges the cargo quicker. Labor certainly more satisfied, the terminals are satisfied, and it reduces the fear of vessels sitting out in the bay at anchor waiting for that berth, because now we're creating that berth space quicker. So good news going on there with the SSA team, and we're really happy about that. This weekend at T18, I think we've talked about that they're not currently operating their on-dock rail. They've needed that space for other storage. So they've been having to truck their cargo, rail cargo, over to the BNC yard. The car balance that I just mentioned at T5 has been so strong that they now, discussions between SSA and the BN, they're saying, hey, let's truck that rail cargo to T5. So from T18 over to T5. Again, just giving it a better opportunity to move out of the harbor that much quicker and more efficiently. So if anything, I would say it's nice to see that there's those kinds of discussions between the two primary parties, between the railroad and the terminal, to figure out the best solutions. We do understand, however, that there is just very recently some high-level discussions between SSA and the Burlington Northern encouraging SSA to reopen and restart their on-dock rail service. There is just demand in the region for that. We need that capacity brought online as soon as SSA can perform that. The T46 near dock yard, we've seen volumes fluctuate in what is the driver, primary driver is, as some of the terminals are having more space to receive, marine terminals are having more space to receive empties by truck, it reduces the demand at the T46 terminal. But the minute the marine terminals fill up on empties or waiting for the vessel to come in and evacuate that large influx of empties, they might cut off the trucks. Then all of a sudden, all the truckers are headed to T46. So it's hot and cold at those facilities, but still a strong asset for us to have there. There's been talk that I'm sure you've all been hearing about the shipping delays or the voided sailings due to the COVID implications in Asia ports. We think we've been seeing some of that void activity as we look down the road at future schedules. Maybe 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, we definitely see an impact of voided sailings as a result of that. So we're kind of on the front end of that a little bit, but unfortunately, we will have a lull with some additional void sailings as a result of that. We talk about rail. The UP, Union Pacific, their rail service has improved. One of the major shippers with the Union Pacific are actually probably stronger in the Tacoma port. WT has seen an increase in rail service. That's going much better. There was very recently about 3,000 rail loads sitting on their terminal. They're down to 1,000 or less right now. So again, indicating that rail service is coming back there. Husky continues to have strong volumes. And I just touched lastly on our break bulk cargo has been real strong, and it's led us to having some discussions recently with the Puyallup Tribe in order to get their interest in leasing us on a month-to-month basis, about 8 acres that is just north and neighbors our EV1 yard, which would allow us much more efficient operations of that break bulk cargo. So we have another meeting coming up this week, and we're encouraged. We think it's going to happen, and it will definitely add to our cargo fluidity through our gateway. And sorry for the long one, but there's a lot of things happening right now, and most of it is good news. So I'll leave it at that and turn it back to Don.
Yeah, I just wanted to add just a couple more operational updates because it's really good news. The first one is I mentioned at the last commission meeting we were going to handle one of the largest military operations, and we did. It was very successful. It was around 800 armored tanks and equipment that moved through Tacoma. It was not without some adversity. We were short some black cars, but the team worked through it. And as you recall, we are the operator for our break bulk business, so buck stops with us. And most importantly, the military was very, very pleased with the way we handled it. And we have, we're being rewarded. We have two more scheduled, one at the end of this month, and then one additional military outload in June. So all good news there. The last item, also really good news. You recall the USDA established a program whereby they're assisting the exporters up at Terminal 46, whereby they established 46 as a staging area. Exporters can deliver their cargo. And exporters, it's namely ag. It's your hay, grain, peas, beans, and lentils. They deliver their cargo there, and then when the vessels open up for receiving over at T5, T18, or T30, the container is then drayed over. The USDA is supporting this by offsetting that dray cost by $200, a dry container, and $400 for a reefer container. Well, anyway, through conversations with them, good work by staff, we now are establishing the Tacoma facility as well. It's at a parcel we call the West Hylobos, also known as the former log dock. And it's really important because many of the, if not all, of the ag exporters, they use multiple carriers, and some of which only call Tacoma. So now we have this program sponsored by the USDA. We offer it at Terminal 46 in Seattle and the West Hylobos down in Tacoma. So I'm really excited about that.
Since we're on a good news roll, I'll just continue. Other items,
we can handle good news very well.
We're bringing it today. Shared with you all in the Friday report, yeah, I wanted to highlight this because it's really interesting how this works. And I think it amplifies the strength of the Northwest Seaport Alliance, quite frankly. And that is that Husky Terminal has been handling MSC cargo as well as the MSC cargo flowing through Terminal 5 since we opened in January. And then just announced the Alliance, which has four strings typically calling our gateway. During the pandemic this past year, they discontinued one of the strings to our gateway and now are reinstating that string. And it was calling at Seattle Terminal, and they've decided to consolidate at Husky Terminal, which for them it makes a lot of sense because having all four strings in one harbor, there's synergy with equipment and how they perform their business. So that's good news for them. Yet it created a challenge for MSC, who again was using Husky Terminal as well as T5, and they just announced that they want to reinstate a service that was calling here last year, the Sentosa service, and they were planning to call it Husky Terminal, yet when they found the news that the PN3 was shifting from Seattle down to Tacoma, TAP SSA and said, hey, can you handle the Sentosa service at T5? So that's now the plan of action, is that they're going to shift more volume through Terminal 5. So all good news because we have two services that were discontinued. These are large services. In fact, the Sentosa service is first port of call on gateway, which we all know is a big deal because it brings a lot of intermodal rail cargo. So that's really exciting news. And thanks to SSA for, and the BNSF for finding a way to handle that business, and really to our staff that is behind the scenes working all of this. And again, I highlight that because when we take a gateway approach, we're really working together, utilizing all of these assets in the Seattle-Tacoma Harbor to benefit our customers. Whereas, you know, if we weren't together working this, we'd be trying to steer them where it may not be a good fit. So this is a great example of that, and I just want to highlight that. And then on the last really good news, our team has worked with Swire and introduced another service. Swire is introducing a service, a direct service call from Vietnam to the Seattle Harbor. And why that's important is, as we all know, manufacturing has slowly been shifting south out of China and into Vietnam, Indonesia, and some of those Southeast Asian countries. And having a first port of call, a direct service, and an expedited service is something that we've been very interested in. And this partnership with that company is strengthened by this new service offering that's coming to our gateway. So again, great news, and we hope to have more good news as we move forward. The other thing I'll say about these niche services like this expedited service, it highlights the need for us to have these large minimum two berth facilities with the superposed Panamax cranes. Yet, it creates an opportunity for us at some of the mid-sized terminals in both harbors to also serve some of these niche services. So it's another strength of our cable. So all really exciting news and a lot of work ahead for our team, but I wanted to highlight that for you.
Very good, yeah, thank you. Any follow-up questions by the team? Yeah.
How long is this USB program 46?
They haven't established an end date at this point.
I assume that, you know, with the focus on agricultural exporting, that, you know, you take the hay coming out of Ellensburg, they got more certainty in terms of being able to make the truck turns that they want to do.
Yes.
I mean, is that what it brings?
Exactly.
Because is really extremely important.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good news.
And is this only at our port, or are they doing this all along?
They're doing
coast?
It in Oakland.
Yeah.
I don't think they're doing it out in Southern California. I think Oakland is the other.
John, did you?
One last thing I wanted to point out. You all have been informed that with the federal government putting forth infrastructure funds that we're applying for a PIDP grant. And some of you were in D.C. last week, and we had an opportunity to visit about that. And Commissioner McCarthy and I had some time to catch up on that and his connections with some of our congressional leadership and Senate leadership. And we are looking at how we can capitalize on that by maybe reshaping how our request comes forward. So stay tuned, more to come on that. But we certainly want to take advantage of that opportunity because there is a tremendous amount of need within our gateway, for sure. It's just how do we package this in a way that's going to be most attractive when the decisions are made. So stay tuned on that.
Well, very good. Thank you, Don.
Commissioner Hasegawa.
Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't see it. Commissioner Hasegawa.
So of all the good news, I'm so sorry to harp on the one little bit of negative news. I'm wondering, you said the we're just at the front end of the impacts from the voided sales from Asia, and that's a result of COVID. Specifically, is that a result of the newest variant coming around and greater restrictions that they have?
I understand it is a new variant that is
okay.
In Asia. I'm certainly don't know all the details.
The main significance is it's happening in Shanghai.
Okay.
One of the world's largest ports.
Right. And this is also almost part of the new normal, right? It's this natural ebb and flow of the economy when there's a new variant that breaks out and industries are taking precautions. So when you're saying that we're sort of at the front end of understanding the impacts for this one, I'm wondering if we've measured the amount of time that this sort of ebb has happened in the past, or if there's any sort of measurements that we could apply to be predictive in the future when a new variant is going around so that we can prepare for that just here as we're operating in the new normal.
Well, and I think that what we're going to be dealing with, because there is already talk of the fact that cargo is going to move. We're not losing that cargo in the long run. Unfortunately, it's going to come at us in a great surge again once this pandemic over there retreats. So now it's, I think, about making sure that our terminals are cleaning up everything that they can, as good as they can, in coordination with our Class 1 railroads, with our truckers, with the warehouse community. Let's make sure that we're in position once that cargo begins flowing faster again to be able to handle it more efficiently this time around.
What are the implications, if I may ask a follow-up question, of that for us on our side? Does that mean just more hoot hours for our work, for workers? Does that mean, you know, delays for some of the trains moving out? Like, what does that look like for us on the operational impact side?
I think it does mean some of what you're just saying. It will create pressure on the terminals again to work more hours, work more efficiently, and move the cargo along as best we can. And again, in close coordination with the other modes of transportation that support us, being those warehouses and trucking companies as well.
In these staging areas? Because T-46 was stood up in the West Hylifos to address the congestion. Mm-hmm. So Tom is right, being proactive, because we may have to expand those those off-site storage areas.
Yeah. And so speaking to the surge in break bulk cargo coming through, I was just wondering out of curiosity, what kind of break bulk? What's surging?
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. In fact, we just had the good fortune of being on a really good call last week with one of our major shippers, that being John Deere. So farm equipment is going to have a really strong year. It continues to have a strong year. We're talking about the ag exports and all. The Midwest farmers, the Asian farmers are all expecting a much bigger year, therefore investing more in their machinery. So strong exports are fully anticipated there. We're getting a lot of road construction type equipment, that type of thing that is also moving through right now. So some of that is kind of a seasonal thing that ships early in the year so people can take advantage of the summer construction seasons and all. So, but it's a wide variety of equipment, but a lot of heavy trucks and heavy equipment.
Very good. Thank you very much for the update. And unless I hear any other commissioners virtually having a question or comment, we're going to move on to the next part of the agenda, which is public comment. We'd now like to invite public comment. Is there anyone present that would like to provide comments?
We have no one signed up.
No one signed up? Okay. Thank you very much. That concludes the public comment portion. We're now on the consent agenda. The consent agenda consists of approve the payment of checks and wire transfers during the period from February 26, 2022 through March 18, 2022 in a total amount of $3,538,137.72. All commissioners in favor of adopting the consent agenda, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Virtually.
Aye.
Aye.
I'm not.
Commissioner Calkins, did we get a response from you?
I'm an aye as well.
Okay. Thank you very much. It has been approved. We next have the audit committee report. And
wait, so Fellman is aye as well?
Oh, I heard him.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item we have on our agenda is the audit committee report. And Commissioner Keller, are you prepared to speak to the audit committee report?
I am. Thank you very much. We are very pleased to report a clean audit. Love clean audits. Great audits from both RSM and the state auditor's office. Would like to thank our staff, RSM and the state auditor's office commented, and they have the last several audit reports on what a great staff we have, that they're very timely in getting any requests for information to them. So they've done a great job. So again, that was wonderful. So there were no findings of fault during their audit of the real incentive program and compliance with the terms of the program, specifically the payments to CMA and CGM. And I asked the audit committee if they wanted to look further into this and were they satisfied with this, and they said yes. So we do not recommend to the managing members to continue to expend other monies to look into this. We felt satisfied with the work that they did. The audit committee is recommending to the managing members to amend the 2016 audit committee charter to allow for audit committee meetings to take place virtually. And to ensure transparency to the public, staff will still post notice of the audit committee meetings, post agenda and materials on our meetings page on the Northwest Seaport Alliance website, live stream audit committee meetings, and staff will be bringing forth this recommendation as an action item before the managing members. And as a great example, I was the only one on the dais. Everyone else was virtual. So we're kind of feeling that this would probably be a good move and probably less expensive to the organization and doesn't have the same sorts of restrictions that a public session does, you know, for managing members. So the audit committee, anything you want to comment on, or?
No, when you get a clean audit, you don't argue.
I like the clean audit. We also thanked RSM because they have done a great service for us for such a long period of time.
Very good. Yeah, Commissioner McCarthy.
You mentioned the CMA CGM payment on the rail incentive program. I haven't seen the audit report, and maybe it wasn't in my package, or is that something you're going to provide to us?
We recently received the exit report from the SAO, and that will be going in your Friday packet this week.
Okay, because I might have a comment depending on that report on your suggestion regarding that $450,000 payment to CMA CGM. We're not current on what they owe to Northwest Seaport Alliance. The Alliance paid them. So, but I want to read the report first, so looking forward to receiving that.
Very good. Any other questions or comments? Commissioner McCarthy.
Yeah, that's okay. I know you got John on your mind.
Yeah.
No, just a quick comment. One of the things, and I think Sam talked about it, when you get a clean audit, you just don't want to say anything. You want to just keep moving forward. I think it behooves us to make sure we congratulate and thank all the staff that work on the audit.
Yes.
One of the things that we as a port authority don't want to ever see is front page headlines about an audit that didn't go the right way. And it's because of their due diligence and their hard work that helped make us be able to present to you this type of an audit. And I just can't thank them enough for all the work they do.
Thank you. Very good comment. And the other thank you I think we all need to say is thank you to the audit committee, commission members, for your time, your efforts. This is an important thing because, you know, when you think about bond ratings and those sorts of things, this is an outside review by someone saying you did it right. And I think that's a real compliment to staff. And I think on behalf of all the commissioners, thank you to the audit committee members, okay?
Of course.
Very good. So not hearing anything further on that topic, we're gonna move actually right into the action agenda. And guess what? The first item is amend the approve the proposed amendment to the 2016 Northwest Seaport Audit Committee charter to allow the committee to meet virtually without in-person attendance by the public. Delani, I guess your name's next to us.
I am indeed. Thank you, Co-Chair Meyer. Good morning, Co-Chairs, Calkins and Meyer, Commissioners, and CEO Wolf. My name is Leilani Baranovis, and I'm coming before you as acting clerk to present a recommendation from the Audit Committee, which held a meeting on Friday, April 22nd. And with that recommendation, we are requesting managing members of the Northwest Seaport Alliance to approve a proposed amendment to the 2016 NWSA Audit Committee Charter to allow the committee to meet virtually without in-person attendance by the public. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the Open Public Meetings Act was temporarily modified to allow public meetings to take place virtually with public attendance provided by telephone. The Alliance's pandemic experience has shown that virtual meetings can be an efficient and fiscally responsible way to conduct managing member work group and committee business.
The current NWSA Audit Committee Charter provides that all audit committee meetings are, quote, open public meetings, unquote, presumably meaning they should be conducted in accord with the OPMA. Absent this reference to the in the charter, the audit committee's meetings would not be otherwise subject to the OPMA as a matter of law. The choice to make them subject to the OPMA is entirely voluntary. Recently enacted amendments to the OPMA allow for fully virtual meetings without providing for in-person attendance by the public, only when, one, there is a state of emergency in effect, and two, meetings cannot be held in person with a reasonable level of safety. Because the NWSA MM meetings, managing member meetings, are being held in person, the conclusion has been made that meetings can be held in person with a reasonable level of safety. Therefore, for the audit committee to meet entirely virtually without providing for in-person attendance of the public, both prongs of the test must be met. Alternatively, the audit committee charter could be amended to remove the requirement for them to be conducted as open public meetings. Current audit committee meetings last about 60 minutes, if that. Historically, we have not had public attend those meetings, even before we went to the virtual environment before COVID hit us. We didn't have public attending. The audit committee doesn't make decisions, they make recommendations that we bring forth to the full board. What happens at the audit committee meetings, we receive reports, basically from our auditors, which get passed on to the full board. The cost for an in-person meeting is about $10,177 per meeting to allow for the cameras for work tech to be here for the people that they have that run our meetings and to run everything smoothly. So the cost for, if we have three audit committee meetings per year, which is in the charter, we can have two to three, the cost is $30,531. Cost for a virtual meeting is $4,611 per meeting, times three meetings a year, $13,833. So the savings to the Alliance for the audit committee meetings to be held virtually is almost $16,700 per year. In the charter, section E under meetings, the charter currently states all committee meetings are open public meetings. Staff recommends amending that statement to all committee meetings will be held virtually and live streamed to allow transparency to the public. We're not trying to hide the audit committee. Staff recommends we still post that the audit committee is happening. We post the materials that are to be included with that meeting, and we will live stream the audit committee so that people in the public can see it, and we're not hiding it. So with that, we are requesting managing members of the Northwest Seaport Alliance approve a proposed amendment to the 2016 NWSA Audit Committee Charter to allow the committee to meet virtually without in-person attendance by the public.
Thank you, Alani. Do I hear a motion?
You don't need one. It's coming from committee.
Excuse me?
It's coming from committee, so it's already been moved and seconded.
Sorry, I didn't know that either.
Sorry.
Oh. Well, it says right here. I need to second to it.
Okay.
I need a motion.
Whatever you want, whatever you don't
want. I don't quite understand how the committee all of a sudden makes that change.
Because we voted it for in committee, therefore you have it first and second because we voted for it.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we didn't make the change.
We didn't make the
change. It was a motion.
Yeah. That committee has a lot of power.
Yeah.
Okay, so all I got to do is call for the vote.
Or discussion. No,
discussion. Yes, Michelle. Commissioner, how's it going?
I'm wondering if the clause to allow the committee to meet virtually without in-person attendance also means that they will not have an opportunity for public comment. If it will be live streamed, is there an opportunity for public comment? If not, is that different than the way things operate without this change? Is there opportunity for public comment in the audit committee meeting usually?
currently, as is, that we do, because of the OPMA, we do allow for public comment. It has never been stated in the charter, so we have treated the audit committee as if it were another full body meeting. So we have that option. No one has taken that option. Just historically, since I have been here, since we created the audit committee, I don't believe we've ever had.
Yeah, if I could address that a little bit, because.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Yeah, and great question. And one of the reasons, like Lonnie talked about, is we've never had a person in the public come to an audit meeting and ask a question. I would assume, based on what we have right now, is that people live stream who want to ask a question can raise their hands, and the same thing would happen during an audit committee if we went to virtual.
Right. Follow-up question. If this change makes it so that we are no longer subject to OPMA, does that also mean that we do not need to have the posting in advance that would invite members of the public who wouldn't be able to provide public comment there to be able to attend if they wanted to be able to vet their thoughts or share in the conversation?
So if I'm understanding correctly, I can address that. We would be, with this amendment, taking out that option. With this amendment, we would not be required to even post notice materials
right.
or live stream the meeting, which is why we're not trying to hide the audit committee, which is why I would recommend that we still do everything as if it were an OPMA meeting,
yes.
but allow it to take place virtually without in-person attendance.
There you go.
But as I understand it, the options are to either operate under a state of emergency or to remove ourselves from the OPMA requirement.
Correct, because we do not qualify for the two-prong test
right.
With the new OPMA amendments and changes. So that's why we would have to amend the charter to allow us to go virtual.
It would not just allow us to go virtual, it would also remove us from complying from any OPMA requirements.
Correct.
And without additionally adding in a clause saying that there will be an opportunity for public comment prior to a committee meeting.
I can offer something that might help here. So part of the reason that the audit committee is not technically required to be conducted in accord with the OPMA is twofold. One is that it does not take public testimony. And two is that it has no independent decision-making authority because it's a recommending body. If you look at the responsibilities, they're all review and report responsibilities. So it is not by law required to be conducted in accordance with
as is.
As is, the charter is oddly written. It says that they are open public meetings. It doesn't reference the OPMA, and it's oddly written. I wouldn't have written it this way. I would have either made us subject to the OPMA or left it out entirely had I been drafting it. So the way the new revisions to the OPMA have come together is that the only way you can meet entirely virtually is if it's a state of emergency, if it's unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're meeting together today right. and otherwise, we've deemed it not to be unsafe to get together.
And it won't always be a state of emergency.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. So I think that the proposal is that we would continue to post and make the materials available, but would not have that formal element as required by the OPMA. And the OPMA right now is requiring that you open up public space and no option for in-person attendance, unless you hit both prongs. And that's the piece we are hoping to avoid and save some costs.
Well, then I suppose I'll just comment this, that how I approach decisions like this is what will optimize inclusion. And I'm seeing a balance between allowing for a continued hybrid setting to provide for more inclusion. And on the end of that line is eliminating the requirement that we take steps to make sure the members of the public at large have access, visibility, and opportunity to provide comment. And so what I'm hearing from staff is through this change, it does allow for an ongoing basis for us to operate in a hybrid or virtual setting. Or an exclusively virtual setting, but that without explicitly writing it into this, there's also a commitment and understanding. The intent of this change is that we will continue to make the operations of this committee visible to the public with advance warning or opportunity to to attend, with opportunity to attend, but not necessarily the opportunity to provide public comment. Is that what I'm understanding?
Which is just the last point, though, they would be able to allow public comment if we as a committee allow it.
Right now, the audit committee charter does not provide that the audit committee takes public comment. So if you want to add that in, that can.
So there would be no change.
There would be no change.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Commissioner McCart.
Yeah, I guess I want to err on the side of transparency. And even though no one showed up here today, it's not to say that next month or there's something that causes people concern that they want to let us know. For the amount of money that we're paying to have this transparent, I don't know that I want to sacrifice this, but let me, Leilani, and I appreciate the committee's recommendation and your work on that. But let me ask you, now, like our virtual meetings here, not only are they live streamed, but people, I think, can go back in the future and look at them.
Correct.
Is that under this proposal that you have, will people have access and ability to go back and look at the meeting?
Yes, because we archive all of our meetings and they are kept on our public website for people to go back and look at previous meetings.
So I want to be clear about what you just asked, Commissioner McCarthy. So it's being taped, the audit committee sessions are being taped.
Correct. Everything
put on the
we
website so that people could follow up. If there was a question, they could follow up.
Okay. And there's also the agenda posted next to that recording with the materials.
If somebody showed up at a meeting last month and had a question, would you tell them, no, I'm sorry, we don't take feedback or questions? Or
no, I wouldn't do that.
I know you would, but somebody explicitly, you know, applying the rules, and kind of what I heard from council was that there's no public input allowed. So I guess I'm wondering, in practice, you know, I want transparency. Somebody's got a question, I'd like them to have that opportunity to ask.
And I think we provide that, and we still post materials where we would post a week before the meeting. And if anyone were to have a question on any of the items that we have,
sure,
we offer the email or the call.
Sure.
And we'll take those and address them.
Commissioner Rosano?
Yeah, a couple things. I'm very supportive of any comment from the public, be it virtual, be it live, or whatever else. And so that could be written into whatever, if this is agreed to. But I'm also reluctant to move forward if any member of this managing members is opposed to it. I would like to just simply say, no, I won't go with it forward with it either. I think it's important that we all fully understand that we are not trying to hide anything. We are not trying to eliminate the ability of the public to not only participate, but also to witness this. So with that understanding, I also don't want to move forward with this unless we have full agreement from all the managing members.
Do you want to table this at this stage? That's where we have an opportunity for input. Commissioner Hosgow.
And I guess given the information, thank you for the opportunity to ask my questions and make sure that we're fully vetting the decisions before us, considering the implications for transparency, which is a cornerstone of effective governance. I guess I just want to comment that I see this as, because it's being live streamed, as a net positive for transparency, because there wasn't really an opportunity for public comment on the front end anyway, there's no change in that regard. So I do see this change as a net positive for transparency and opportunity for public input.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Motion's been on the floor. It's been seconded.
Commissioners who are virtual, do you have anything? Any comments?
Yeah.
I just had a question. When a public member attends virtually and then we ask for any public comments, are they able just to press the raised hand button and we'll be able to get to them? Or do they have to call in ahead of time or write a letter? I just want to know that if someone's in attendance, that they can have the convenience of just raising the hand and they'll be able to have a comment.
So Commissioner Ang, thank you for the question. We will not have that option. We don't have it now currently for someone calling in to the audit committee to raise their hand or to participate in that respect.
I guess I'm more concerned about our meeting, this particular meeting, than the audit meeting. I guess when we talked about public participation, just a question about this particular meeting that we're having. I agree with you. Our regular meetings.
So currently for our regular meetings, since we've gone back to an in-person environment, we send out word for those that, for the public who want to participate or to give public comment, to either submit it by email or to come in person, and we open up the public comment section of our agenda.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, so there's no way that they can just virtually raise a hand and testify.
Not
okay, all right, that was just my thing. I actually agree with the action that you've presented. It's just that I wish we can give options to people who could just virtually raise their hand and testify and don't have to take time out of their day to go to our either drive and wait around and then give a testimony or email, just basically be able to raise a hand and say a comment. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Commissioner McCarthy.
I think this is something I'd like to think about for 1 month, so taking Commissioner Marzano's opportunity, I'd like to think about this for 1 month. But it's one of those things that come before you, and it is a fundamental cornerstone of public government, and so that's my preference.
Can
I just ask what your reservations are? It's not clear to me what aspect of this you're not.
Well, I think as I expressed, Commissioner, my questions, I would prefer a process that gave people an opportunity formally to ask questions. I know, Leilani, you said you would allow them, but I'm also hearing there's no right to that. So I would prefer a rule that said, if that number one makes it clear that we publish a notice of the meeting, we publish the material, and in the publication, if you've got questions or comments, you may submit them. I would prefer those sorts of opportunities. If we're going to rewrite the rule, I would write them in a way that allowed that, as opposed to
I agree with you, Commissioner McCarthy, and I would offer an amendment to that effect.
We can do that
sure
today. I was thinking that also, Commissioner.
We can do that today. We can address your concern today. Let's make it a requirement that we notify the public and accept public comment in audit committees.
Okay.
So
you said that again. I love
that. That we would notify the public ahead of time, and that we would offer public comment at audit committees.
Seconded.
Okay, that's an amendment to the main motion.
Yes.
And it's been seconded?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we're going to vote on the amendment. And you want to read the amendment, Dana, just so we're clear?
At the recommendation of the audit committee, request managing member of the Seaport Alliance approve a proposed amendment to the 2016 audit committee charter to allow the committee to meet virtually without in-person attendance by the public, provided that advance notice of the audit committee agenda and materials is provided to the public and an opportunity for public comment is provided.
And I want to clarify is that that's virtually correct.
Right.
We offer
right.
a virtual
yes.
yeah. number
right.
and they're able to. Thank you.
You don't need mail them.
So we're voting on the provision.
The amendment
as articulated by our attorney. Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Virtually?
Aye.
Aye.
I only heard two ayes.
Commissioner Fellman, I saw the mouth move, but I didn't see.
I said aye.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Motion passed.
That was a happy aye.
The amendment passed. Now we're on to the main motion. Any further
thank
discussion?
You,
hearing none,
sorry.
I'm calling for the vote of the main motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A great Great result. Okay. Now, we're on to the next item. It's a dual action by the Northwest Seaport Alliance in the Port of Seattle. This is the T-46 Substation Number One Replacement Project. Arthur Kim, welcome.
Hello, my name's Arthur Kim, Capital Project Manager with the Port of Seattle. I want to thank everyone here today for your time so I can discuss this project to you. Today, we were requesting project authorization for T-46 Number One Replacement Project. Text is really small on screen. Request managing member authorization to design field. Request 1A. Request managing member authorization to use design field as an alternative to design bid field for the T-46 Substation Number One Replacement Project. Request B. Request managing members of the NWSA authorization for the chief executive officer or their delegates to approve the total cost not to exceed $6,600,000, 20% of which will be allocated to the Port of Seattle for the replacement of Substation Number One located at Terminal 46, servicing both areas of Terminal 46 licensed to the NWSA and the Terminal 46 North Pier under Port of Seattle management. And for vote two, Port of Seattle only vote, request Port of Seattle Commission authorization for the executive director or their delegate to approve 20% of the total cost not to exceed $1,340,000 for reimbursement to the Northwest Seaport Alliance for the replacement of Substation Number One located at Terminal 46, licensed to the NWSA and the Terminal 46 North Pier under Port of Seattle management.
So I'm here to assist Arthur and just kind of give a high-level summary, and then he'll take the rest of the time to explain a little bit more detail about the project itself. So here's our site plan, just the location of Terminal 46 within the North Harbor. I think you're all pretty familiar with that by now. This slide shows the location of Substation 1 in the red circle area. That substation, there's more than one on the premises. This one does primarily support the north section of the terminal, including yard lighting, some retail port plugs, the administration building, and some other areas within the Terminal 46 area. And additionally, the blue section is showing the North Pier 46 section, which is port managed. The Port of Seattle uses that portion of property for taking seasonal vessels, non-marine cargo, other vessels within there, that split. So one of the things I did want to start out is that the substation, we as the Alliance acquired responsibility for that substation in January of 2020. And if you remember, that is after TTI Terminals terminated their lease with us. Prior to that, it was under their responsibility for continuing maintenance on that terminal. The condition of the terminal at that time, we discovered that it was having some issues through the process of looking at it for upgrades related to the cruise terminal, the potential cruise terminal redevelopment project. During that time, we found out that the substation was requiring quite a bit of work. We then had the engineering department do a study in July of 2020. And at that point in time, we understand that this terminal substation is approximately 25 years old. It's nearing its service life. And it's not safe to maintain because it does not meet current electrical codes. If the substation were to go down at this point in time, we could not go back and maintain it to get it up and running. We would have another potential for temporary substations until we could get it replaced. So it's something that we need to look forward to be proactive and ensuring that we continue to have electrical
use of the terminal. So as we stated before, 600 amps of the 3,000 amps of this terminal is dedicated to that north portion, which is the Port of Seattle North Pier of Pier 46. And that's how we got to the 20% allocation, so that the Port of Seattle would reimburse the Northwest Seaport Alliance. So the Northwest Seaport Alliance will pay for the project in total and then acquire the reimbursement after the project's completed. Well, with that, I'll turn it back over to Arthur.
Thank you very much. So as we mentioned before, in the Port of Seattle engineering memo from 2020, it showed that the electrical equipment is unsafe, does not meet national electrical code requirements, and is at the end of its service life. Seattle Speed Light will also be replacing a transformer at the same time. They're going to take this opportunity to upgrade their transformer, replace their transformer, since we are replacing our substation as well. And so we want to take advantage of that and find it concurrently, so that we can reduce downtime from through construction. Existing substation number one is approximately 25 years old, supports several areas, as Bill mentioned before, admin building, north yard lighting, as well as the north berth with the Port of Seattle, gate check, inspection platform, stormwater systems, and sewer lift stations. We'll be using design build for this project because there are long lead times for electrical components at this time. And by using design build, we can actually order parts earlier in the process rather than waiting for full design authorization and construction authorization through the commission and then be able to order parts at that time. On the right side here is a mock-up of how the new substation transformer will be installed. Electrical engineers like to call this in parallel installation. I know physically it's perpendicular, but in parallel means they're going to install the new one before they take out the old one, so that we can reduce downtime and not have temporary generators powering the electrical project. The initial design elements will be run by the Port of Seattle, and then most of the other steps beyond that will be through the design build contractor, including design, including construction. We have several objectives here: place an aging and serviceable unsafe substation at Terminal 36 in a timely manner to prevent inevitable failure, coordinate project with CLC Light's new transformer to increase the time and need for temporary power, and prevent a major power disruption at Terminal 46. This is our projected schedule for the project. Upon our, if we do get authorization today for this project, we will be working with CPO to obtain the design build firm, and the inspection substantial completion will be done in approximately quarter three of 2024. The estimated cost of the project, pre-design and design build for this project, is $697,000. Estimated budget is the same. The current CIP plan allocates $3.269 million. The cost of the replacement will be split 80% to the NWSA and 20% to the Port of Seattle. The NWSA project cost will be capitalized and depreciated over 20 years, resulting in annual depreciation of approximately $268,000. The Port of Seattle will be doing the same. At $67,000 a year. This table shows the total cost of $6.7 million, with the cost split with the Alliance coming in at $5,360,000, and the Port of Seattle share being $1,341,000. There are several permitting requirements for this project: SNEPA review, LNI certification, City of Seattle construction permit, and City of Seattle electrical permit. In conclusion, Part 1 vote for NWSA managing members to vote. As referenced in NWSA Resolution Number 2020-02, Master Policy Paragraph 8, Section 4, managing member authorization required to perform alternative public service. request authorization to use design build as an alternative design bid build for terminal 46 substation number one replacement project, master identification number U00671, book 1D, as referenced in Northwest Seaport Alliance Resolution number 2020-02, exhibit A, delegation of authority master policy, paragraph 8, section 3, states project cost exceeding $300,000 to require approval from managing members. Request managing members of the Northwest Seaport Alliance authorization of the chief executive officer and their delegates to approve the total cost not to exceed $6,700,000, 20% of which could be allocated for the port of Seattle for the replacement of substation number one, located in Terminal 46, servicing both areas of Terminal 46, licensed to the Northwest Seaport Alliance and the Terminal 46 North Pier under Port of Seattle management. Master identification number, U00671. The second vote, for Port of Seattle Commission only a vote, request Port of Seattle Commission authorization for the executive director or their delegate to approve 20% of the total cost, not to exceed $1,340,000. On reimbursement to NWSA for the replacement of substation number one located at Terminal 46, licensed to the NWSA and Terminal 46 North Pier under Port of Seattle Management, master identification number U00671. Thank you very much for your time. I welcome any questions.
Thank you, Arthur. Thank you, Jennifer. Now, according to my little script here, this I'd like to take all three of these action items as one. And it's a dual action vote by the Alliance and the Port of Seattle Commissioner. So I would ask that the motion and the second come from the Port of Seattle Commissioners. So if that's okay with the body, I'd like to entertain a motion and a second from Port of Seattle Commissioners.
So moved.
Seconded.
Been moved and seconded. And discussion.
Go ahead.
Arthur, thank you for your presentation. I feel, for my educational purpose, could you just explain to me the procurement method that you're switching to, you say, will help expedite delivery. Is that because you're moving a layer of procurement or bidding, or is that because the nature of this project is more build than design?
So electrical components have been affected fairly heavily recently, where substations previously were taking 6 months for procurement, but now it's taking 12 to 16 months at this time. If we are able to design build, if we can design mid build, we'd have to get full design completed before we can procure parts and bring on the contractor to procure the parts. But if we can design build, they can decide early on in the design process what specs of the equipment they can need, and they can order those parts before design's completed.
Right, okay. So you're consolidating.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Commissioner Hosokawa.
I was just wondering what the benchmark is for substantial completion of the project.
Can you, I guess I'm not quite understanding your question.
You, 3 slides ago, said that you're anticipating substantial completion of the project by some date that I don't remember. So I'm just wondering, is it like 20% completed? Is it 51% completed? Is it almost there and everything set?
Oh, substantial completion. We should have it completely installed and the old one removed as well. There's still going to be like accounting things that we'll have to keep the project open for, but the construction and actual in-use should be by that date of substantial completion.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And Commissioner McCarthy.
You know, I see this was in the capital and improvement project list for about half the price that we're estimating, about $3.3 million. Now you're $6.7 million. Did has it gone up that much just in that short period of time, the estimate?
Unfortunately, it has in a short period of time. Overall construction market has been really volatile in the last couple months, and especially with electrical components. Lead times have been doubled. Escalation prices have more than doubled during that time. So when you compound those two together, it makes it very quickly moving target. And so we need to anticipate the risk that a lot of contractors are baking into their bids now. We've seen a lot of electrical projects where they've been coming in higher than what our internal estimates have been coming in. And that's just in the last couple months alone.
That's a big ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
From the virtual commissioners, any questions?
Virtual.
Commissioner Feldman.
Yes, thank you. So during the tenure of the time that the board the Alliance, what other than the lighting of the north part of the terminal has the Port of Seattle been using?
So one thing I want to make clear is this is not related to the ILA for the cruise. So that 20% is separate. It's related to the North Pier, which is outside of the Terminal 46 boundary and is actually managed by the Port of Seattle. So okay. Yeah, that's questions come up a few times. So thanks for the clarification.
I appreciate that. So I guess related to this, it's not really related to this, but it relates to the payments. So just help me remember again, we have PCMC using one of the cranes. And the understanding was that we were specific about that the cranes had handling cargo before we were sharing the cost of those cranes, or just we're collecting rent on the use of those cranes. But we still, the Port of Seattle is the only one that owns them. Is that not the case?
I believe as it relates to the training center lease with PMA and the use of one crane as part of training for the ILWU, the agreement is such that the Port of Seattle owns the asset, owns the crane. The Port of Seattle leases the crane essentially for a dollar free and forgoes the maintenance costs associated with that crane, including the cost to bring it up to operations, one-time cost, that was borne by the tenant, PCMC, that is providing, or PMA, that is providing the use of that crane. That's how the agreement is structured, I believe.
But if it was a terminal operator, if it was in cargo use, it would be we'd be getting reimbursed. I mean, obviously, a refurbished crane is only useful to either the training facility or a cargo operator. The fact that the port gets an upgraded crane, I mean, the same thing would go on with if we reopened. You know, if somebody were to take on the use of the north end of 46, the cost would be on them to upgrade the cranes so they would be functional to them, right? They're really of no use to the port per se, but they already exist. It's a lot cheaper to refurbish one than it is to buy a new one. So I'm just not sure that we're getting some value added because we now have a refurbished crane that we're not in the crane business.
Did I miss something?
This is aside. Your question is actually aside from the substation itself. But I can answer that it would be in line with how we've already handled the agreement between the port and the PMA. So we have an ILA between the Port of Seattle and the Northwest Cedar Bar Alliance for management of Crane 80. We would put into that same ILA and amend it in the future, potentially adding the other two cranes. That puts the burden on the Alliance, then we transfer it to whomever we're leasing to at that time, or the users, for getting them up and running and ongoing maintenance. And that's a burden that we transfer then through a lease, as CEO Wolf has just mentioned.
Thank you, Jennifer, for that general
question. I'm sorry for confusing them. I was mistaken about the north terminal being why we have the 46, but so at no point in time does the port itself accrue any, we're not getting like the first reimbursement of the crane revenue. It's just that the cranes are getting upgraded. I'm just wondering, because we put out to secure the cranes. I just don't understand how that isn't being reimbursed to the port.
Commissioner Feldman, what I'd like to do is be focused on
Let's do the
substation replacement. We'll talk about general information at a later date, perhaps. But I want to, unless I hear any other questions specific to the substation replacement, Hearing none, just by way of a reminder, this is a dual action vote, and the Port of Seattle Commission will be acting in a dual role as managing member commissioners for the Alliance and as commissioners of the home port for this item. As set forth in the Charter for Dual Action Votes, this vote will be taken by a show of hands for the commissioners present. And then I will ask that the clerk call roll relative to the commissioners who have joined us virtually. So though all of those in favor, please raise your hands. Clerk? Recorded?
Everyone has their hands
Everyone
raised in the room.
Would you call the roll for the commissioners virtually?
Commissioner Eng?
Aye.
Commissioner Calkins?
Aye.
And Commissioner Fellman?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Arthur and Jennifer. We're now on to the next item, which is a briefing agenda. CBO Wolf, please.
Thank you, Chair Meyer. We quarterly have committed to providing an update on the construction for the redevelopment of Purple Quad. So we're at that time where our project team is here before you today to provide an update as to really what is phase two development of Terminal 5. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Emma and Thais.
Yes, good afternoon, commissioners. Thais Howard, Director of Engineering for the Northwest Seaport Alliance. As CEO Wolf just mentioned, on a quarterly basis, we've been coming to give you an update for 2.5. So this is our Q1 2022 quarterly update. Just as a high-level overview, two big things that I think will come out of the update today is that many of you have heard about the recent concrete strike in Seattle. So we'll hear about how that has impacted our schedule because it has. We do have some delays. We haven't finalized that all the way, so we'll be updating you on that, as well as just some general good news about the program itself. As you can remember, we've always been tracking our P85, which is the 85% probability of what we will complete the project at as far as cost. And right now, we are tracking a little below what we reported the last time. The last time our P85 was $8 million, and now we are tracking at, I think it's $9 million, and now we're tracking at a little bit, $389.5 million. So we are tracking a little bit low on the P85, and if I don't have those numbers correct, Emma will give the exact numbers, but we are tracking a little lower. So we are within our $390 million and tracking a little lower than what we're reporting from Q4 2022. With that, I'll turn it over to our capital program manager, Emma Dovinto, and then we can take any questions at the end of the presentation.
Thank you.
Hey, good afternoon, Commissioner CEO Wolf. So I'm Emma Dovinto for the Seattle Capital Program Leader and PFI Program Manager. So today's briefing is Terminal 5 Q1 2022 update. Moving on to slide 2 is our typical scope elements. So these are the three that we know, the berth modernization, and then the upland split into two pieces, the permit conditions, and then the lease obligations. There have been no changes to scope in Q1 2022. So I will move on to the next slide. So looking at general progress in Q1 22, it's been a really notable quarter for the berth modernization in particular, with the in-water berth third window completion. So what does that mean for the north berth? So that was the first pass of dredging for these two berths. So the north berth was done this year, south berth is gonna be in the next window for the contract. So the north berth was in fact accelerated and completed. And we're currently working with the pilots after a detailed data analysis has been performed to modify the least depth of the north berth. So that is really great news. The south berth, a lot of work there with the structural pile, the toe wall install, and then the divers and geotechs recently completing the analysis of the installation. And very, very recently validating that the install was completed per design and permit conditions. So the next step is the concurrence from SDCI, so Seattle Construction, Seattle Department of Construction and Inspection, to validate that they approved the global install for the South Berth. So a really major milestone for the South Berth here. Then going down Seattle City Light, we are pending actually a pre-final invoice now, and when they finish the off-site work, the final invoice will come in. We think that might even be next year. For the uplands, permit conditions are strongly tied to the West Seattle Bridge, and these will kick off in the next few months more aggressively. And for the lease obligation, stormwater is moving forward. Phase one is about to complete. Phase two is about to start. And then the new gate is at 60% design. On a very positive note, the North Marine building, which was finished at the end of last year, all the final numbers have shown us that we delivered it in under budget. So that's been great news. Moving on to the next slide, which is the budget slide. So here, let's take a look, starting at the first column of authorized budget, what has changed. Our current authorized budget is the $390 million budget. In December 2021, $2.5 million were approved for the purchase and installation of base scales and South Reefer Restoration Project as part of the partial settlement agreement. And this, as you can see in the third column, increased the total budget to $392.5 million. Then, let's look at the changes to management reserve, and you can see those on the second column and in the notes. So what's happened here is we approved $200,000 for the South Marine building design package to get to ready to bid. We approved $1 million out of management reserve for the gate scales, an additional $300,000 for the interim gate repair to be completed, and $705,000 to support the merit administration grant administration monies that are funded by the grant. And then we moved the $2 million back into management reserve from the December authorization that we had previously taken out for radiation portal monitors, customs, and water protection. There's a lot of detail in there, and I can definitely get into any questions as we get into the end. Bottom line here is that our spend to date through March 31st of $236.5 million are on track with our forecasts and with the progress to date. Move on to slide five. This takes a slightly different look at the budget, more project focused. So we've been doing this for a few quarters now. The first line looks at the North and South Berth. No major changes since the previous presentation here. Construction's 78% complete on this. We're 84% spent and forecast to come in on budget. Second line, similarly with the permit conditions and tribal payments, also on the forecast and coming in on budget. Stormwater has been consistent with the reporting over the past few years that we're likely about 6% over budget. Now, below that line is the management reserve and then the elements, major elements that constitute the management reserve. The clean trucks, the RPMs, the marine buildings, and operations are currently all aligned with their authorizations. And the reefer and gate projects, you can see a discrepancy between the current authorized project cost and the total project cost, again, similar to the last quarter. And these are dependent on further scope determination, expecting those in the next few months. As we go on the lower half of the slide, we see the grants, and you will see a recent change to the merit grant share. So the total of the merit grant is $10.7 million, and we're sharing this between SSA and the Northwest Teapot Alliance in a proportionate share. And so our allocation is the line immediately below the MAC PIDP grant, the one that says MAC PIDP grant Northwest Teapot Alliance of $7.481 million. So that compared to most recent slides slightly lowers the total number of the grants. And so our authorization minus the grants has us delivering the program at about $371 million. I'll move on to trends. So every quarter we sit down, update the stochastic analysis and the risk register. And we look at what Tate was saying, the 85% probability of being sufficient. Our current value went down by $500,000 this last quarter to $389.3 million. And this is a very positive decrease. Moving on to schedule. At a very high level, Tate mentioned the supply chain issues for materials and specialty power delivery are impacting schedule on some tasks and projects. Labor strikes are strongly impacting the schedule for phase two breast modernization, the stormwater and the radiation portal monitoring utilities. So looking here at the concrete strike, and then the other major schedule risk that we're coming out of is the final determination for the successful completion of the in-water work. So that, as I said, our geotechs and engineers gave a favorable install update and just waiting on the city there. So looking at the blue lines up the top, those are the berths. North berth completed, now in punch list. South berth is the second blue line under there. We're moving along with mainly the land side impacted by the concrete strike. We'll have more updates as there's clarity on the impacts of that. The dredging, again, the smallest blue box at the very end is for the next in water work window and with the high spots for the north berth and all of the south berth dredging. Yellow lines are the permit conditions. We had a hard obligation before we started operations and met all of those. And now we have to complete some work with the city on permit conditions that are dependent on the West Seattle Bridge completion and work through the length of the terminal permit conditions, which we're doing with the operator very positively. The green part is going to be the lease obligations. We delivered all the phase one lease obligations. Now we're looking at stormwater phase one and two, and then the phase two lease obligations, which are going to be the South Marine Building, the reefers, North Reefers specifically, and the gate, the new gate. So the dates for those are going to be also dependent on the agreement that is shortly going to be reached. The gray line under that are our tenant partner works on site. They also completed phase one and are looking at them scheduling their phase two work. And then the red line at the very bottom is adjacent work, which is mainly the rail work. So phase one, again, we managed in a very short time to get the rail up and running, which was a major achievement for the team. And now looking at ongoing work that's going to be funded by the Merit Grant to have the rail up and running for the next 20 or 30 years. Okay, community outreach, looking at various media events and setting these up, scheduling them in Q2 for Q2 and Q3. The look ahead, what can we expect to happen in Q2 2022? So ongoing work on the South Berth, as concrete is now available, and very positively in the last few weeks, we went from about a 2-week notice of availability to now having a 1-month notice of availability. we expect the Seattle City Light invoice. As I mentioned, completion of phase one stormwater, start of phase two. I expect to be able to complete our work on the CBP utilities and then move forward with the reefer design and the new gate design. And then a quick overview of the terminal if we want to reference this. And finishing on a really positive note, you can see here how construction and operations are really, really close and tight. And I want to give kudos to the team. It's been really extraordinarily seamless, both the start of operations and continuing the very heavy civil work during intense operations. So, well done to the team. That is it for Q1 today for me, and happy to take any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Emma. Questions? Discussions?
I just have one comment. You know how proud I am of the staff for all the community outreach that you're doing with, especially I think Lindsay has been going around to different individual neighborhoods to talk to them about the construction and keeping them updated. I think that that's such a positive thing for us, and thank you for doing that.
And thank you. It's exciting to be out there, and definitely a lot of point of questions, and we've partnered strongly with them. So a lot of questions around the bridge, and then actually interest in cycle lanes recently. So a lot of the traffic management around the terminal captures people's interest as well as the noise. So given the expectation management there for what an operating terminal and construction sounds like.
Any further comments, questions? Hearing none, thank you. Thank you, Emma. Thank you, Thais.
Thanks.
We will now move to general business, I think is what's on the agenda.
Yes.
CEO Wolf, announcements?
I have nothing.
You have nothing more? Okay. Commissioner comments? Do we have any commissioners that would like to make any comments? Hearing none. Do I have any commissioners virtually that want to make comments? Hearing none, all those in favor, well, no, I could just adjourn.
Commissioner Fellman, did you have a comment you wanted to make?
No, I was saying none, thank you.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Coggins?
What's the date?
None for me either.
And Commissioner Eng?
Nope, none for me, thank you.
Leilani, what time is it?
It's time to close the meeting. It's 1:07.
We are now adjourned. 1:07. Very good.